This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Danger! Danger!
It's not a lineup, it's not an army, it's not a stable, and it's not a family. It's an alliance of businessmen.
Take it right.
Place to Be Nation, you're listening to the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast, featuring a different way to look at and debate the history of wrestling. And now, your co-host, the PTBN PWO two-man power trip, JT and Will.
The Dangerous Alliance would rather die than surrender to you.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to episode 3 of the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast, your two-man power trip with you as always. I am JT, along with good old Will from Texas, of course, one of the admins at ProWrestlingOnly.com. And Will, how are you on this fine Thursday evening?
Man, I am doing good, but if the Spurs sign LaMarcus Aldridge, like the rumors say they might, I'll be feeling even better. Non-wrestling talk. Sorry, we'll wait till they talk.
Maybe for the mailbag, Dan can make up like an NBA draft question for us that we can talk about.
There you go.
And of course, the Dan we reference is our producer here tonight. Is Dan McGinn as usual? Dan, how are you?
I am doing fine. I am bleeding Celtic green, and they're going to be picking all night long. So if I'm a little distracted or miss my cues for you guys, I blame it on the Celts.
Well, that's the whole point of the podcast, is for you to give us cues, so let's try and pay attention.
Hey, Dan, what's funny about that is my dad was such a huge Celtics fan in the 80s, you know, when I was growing up, that if you rooted for the Lakers, you weren't allowed in our house while the Celtics game was on. You weren't allowed.
Well, Scott Criscolo would have been barred from your house then.
He would have been.
Smart man right there. Smart man, probably good looking too.
Scott might have been banned from the house for being a Republican as well, but you know, it's another story for another day. But anyway, continue, sorry.
No problem. We'll squeeze a little NBA in at the end, I think. So let's, all right. So as usual here on the show, what we do is we have three different challenges. We'll, go matchup by matchup, fall by fall. We'll have Dan set them up, and then at the end of the show, we'll do a little bit of mail as well, 10 or 15 minutes of questions that we have culled from our listeners and fans out at the Pro Wrestling Only message board and Facebook. So, without further ado, Dan McGinn, tell us, what is fall number one?
The choice is yours.
You can get with this, or you can get with that. You can get with this, or you can get with that. You can get with this, or you can get with that.
We are going to play a little draft time. We're into year two of our three-year arc, and that year, of course, is 1986.
All right, so if you heard last episode, which you should have by now if you're listening to this one, Will and I are building our rosters to book for a three-year period. We started with 1985. We each took 8 singles guys and 2 tag. I'm going to have Dan run the rosters down in just a moment. But there's a little twist, Will, this time around. So before we draft...
Uh-oh.
Before we draft, we're each going to drop 2 of our picks from last year's draft, 1985, last week, last episode. And then we will pick the same amount that we picked in that one. So we're going to pick 8 solos, 2 tags, but we have to drop 2 of our picks. And I think those 2 guys that we drop should not be available to be drafted. They have to sit a year, so they can come back in 1987 if you want. How about that?
I have no problem with that.
All right, so quickly over the rules again. Draft in 3-year arcs. We're building our promotion for the next 3 years, 85 through 87. There'll be 10 picks total, like we mentioned. We must explain the intent on how we're going to use the star after the draft. We'll do a snake style. Will kicked off 85, so I think it's only fair that I will start 1986. Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair, ineligible. They do not exist in this universe. When you draft someone, you get how they were for that 3-year stretch of time. You do not have to use them as they were used at that stretch of time. So, for example, if Hulk Hogan were available, you get the Hulk Hogan from 1986 to 1987. and you do not get, but you do not have to use him how he was used at that time. So if you wanted to turn him heel, you wanted to be Thunderlips, you know, Dizzy Hogan, whatever the hell his other characters were. However you want to use him, you can use him, but you get him in that physical state that he was in during that time. So the, basically the powers he was at that point, and then we'll go from there. So with all that said, Dan, why don't you read us the rosters we drafted for 1985 on our last episode? And I assume you have started the clock by this point.
Of course, okay. We'll start with Will's team, and he went with his first pick, Randy Macho Man Savage. Then he followed that up with Ted DiBiase, Ricky Steamboat, the Road Warriors, Hawk and Animal, Greg Valentine, Midnight Express of Eaton and Condrey, Kerry Von Erich, Sergeant Slaughter, Dick Murdoch, and Arn Anderson. Shall I go to yours as well?
Yep.
And for JT, it was Jerry Lawler, Roddy Piper, Barry Windham, Tully Blanchard, Tito Santana, Terry Funk, Andre the Giant, Nick Bockwinkel, the Rock and Roll Express, and the British Bulldogs.
All right, Will. So, are we in agreement that I will kick off 86 here since you kicked off 85?
Sure, but let's drop our two guys first.
Yes, good call. So, who's your first guy that you're dropping?
I'll tell you both of them. Okay. I don't think it matters, right, since they're ineligible.
Correct.
I'm going to drop two people. One guy spent most of 86 in a tag team with one of the worst wrestlers of all time, Brutus Beefcake, and I'm dropping Greg Valentine for 1986 because it was a down year. Because actually, he was a champion, but, man, what a bad partner he was saddled with. So I'm dropping the hammer. And the other guy I'm going to drop, another bad year for this family, for this promotion, 1986 World Class was a mess. Kerry Von Erich is getting dropped in 86.
All right, I can't argue with either of those. I mean, I like Valentine a lot. I think your reasoning's sound, and when you look at the rest of your roster, I think he's definitely the most cuttable. I think mine, I have one very easy choice, and that is the British Bulldogs. I'm going to go ahead and let loose because I think there's some other tag teams I could fill the slot with. That I like as well, and I don't think they were, you know, I think they were my weakest pick from that installment. The next one, a little bit tricky. I've been going back and forth between two guys, and the guy I'm going to cut loose on paper may seem a little questionable, but I think I can fill his slot, and, you know, he wasn't really a major presence, I don't think, in North America anyway in 1986, and that's Terry Funk. I think you get the you get the one strong, crazy year out of him in 85 in my promotion, and then he shuttles off to the next territory or over to Japan, wherever he wants to head off retirement, wherever he was in 86.
Well, one of his 17 retirements, sure.
And I came close to cutting Tito, but I want to keep him. Because I said,
he's a workhorse, man. He'll always be a workhorse.
All right, so for my first pick here in 1986, now I got rid of Funk, and I said I'm going to replace him kind of along the same lines, kind of cowboy-type guy, of course, a major star. Been in the news quite a bit lately, but I think I can slot him in if I want to maybe start to turn Jerry Lawler heel, or I want to give him a big name to team with for a bit and then turn. Maybe if I want to shift Andre heel at some point in here, and that is the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, of course, had come over from Florida, having a couple of big years in the NWA. I don't think I need to sell you on the American Dream as a star.
Not at all.
I'm going to go ahead and bring him in as my number one pick for 86.
And if you want to hear a great tribute to Dusty Rhodes, listen to the Exile on Bad Street pay-per-view that I did with Chris Zellner and Bix. So that's all I'll say about that one. 3.5 hours on Dusty Rhodes.
Lots of Dusty coverage
on the
site. We had that. We had History of Wrestling with Graham Cawthon and Dan is with us here tonight, and Brad Stutz. And then also the Kevin Kelly Show. Kevin was a huge fan of Dusty growing up, so he talked a lot about him, as well as he had Dr. Tom Pritchard on, who knew Dusty well. So he paid respects as well. So lots of Dusty talk over the last couple weeks here at PlaySpeedNation.com. And now he's my number one pick, 86.
Well, my number one pick for this, I think 1986 was a banner year for this guy. As a character, as a heel, and maybe his best in-ring year as well, and that's Jake the Snake Roberts.
Ah, okay. Great pick.
I had to replace the hammer for a heel. I needed a heel to replace
Great
the
pick.
Hammer.
I was hoping he'd maybe fly under your radar, at least to the first round, so I could get him on the rebound. Oh, well. Can't argue
this is your
well.
Second pick, buddy.
No, you get to go. Snake style.
Oh, wow. Okay. Oh, well, good, because my next pick, now, you picked your All-American, the American Dream Dusty Rhodes. I'm going to pick an All-American. You know him by his famous call, ho, and that is Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Again, Jim Duggan started off 86 in the UWF, and I think, did he leave in late 86, early 87?
Yeah, he debuted, I think it's shortly before WrestleMania 3 he came in, so early 87.
Okay, yeah, so 86, he was in the UWF, and he was carrying that company along with DiBiase and others, and I need a big drawing baby face, someone that the crowd can get behind. The match quality might dip a little bit, but Duggan could brawl. You know, JR, you've seen that. Duggan can brawl, he can bleed, he can fight with the best of them, so I think he's a solid number two.
All right, and I'm going to stick in the same promotion that Duggan was in. I'm going to take one of his main rivals that year. Of course, one part of the Fabulous Freebirds was UWF champion in 86, and then had the feud with Duggan. That's Terry Bam Bam Gordy, my second.
Wow, yeah. Yeah, Terry Gordy might have been in contender for Wrestler of the Year in 1986. Just a fabulous, fabulous run.
All right, well, I'm feeling good about getting him here with my second pick, round overall. And then to kick off the third round, I'm going to batted a couple guys back and forth here, but I'm going to go with another guy. You know me, I love my versatility here on my roster. Guys that could work face, guys that could eventually go heel, and this guy was a high-level face coming off a great run in the AWA. We'd be heading to WWF soon as part of a tag team, and that's Rick Martel, a guy I've always been a fan of. And I may even start Strike Force a little early if I want to. Yep. Again, versatility is my key.
And he's coming off a world title run in the AWA, so yep. He has world title credibility too.
Yes.
Rick Martel. When I was growing up watching him in the WWF, I really thought he was kind of overrated. I'd hear about how great he was and what a great wrestler he was, and I don't think the WWF really showed how great of a wrestler Rick Martel really was, because when you go back and watch that old AWA or Canada footage, the guy is one of the best wrestlers of the 80s, bar none. So props for picking Rick Martel, bud.
All right, you get your next two here. Your round three and then open round four.
Well, I'm going to open up with the first tag team.
Ooh.
Okay. And this is an AWA tag team, and they're going to bleed a lot. And it's kind of a tribute to one of your favorite wrestlers here, Shawn Michaels. I'm going to pick the Midnight Rockers.
Oh, nice pick. Great pick. Great pick. Not even.
Yeah.
Nice
you know, the Rockers were really probably the best team in the WWF when they arrived there, like in the late 80s, early 90s, once the Brainbusters left. Rockers really carried that tag division. But, man, they were awesome in 1986 AWA. So yep. I'm definitely going to pick them. And my next pick is also coming from the AWA, because this was the evolution of a man coming from the mid-card to world title contender. You know who I'm picking.
And I hate you for it. I was hoping to get him.
Future Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig.
He's the guy who almost took over Martel.
Yeah, well, I mean, hey, if you wouldn't have picked Hennig or Martel, I would have picked him, so... You know, but you're doing strong, man. I know. We want them all, right?
We want them all. Let's just combine our. You know what? Let's do an invasion angle. Right out of the gate.
All right. Who do you got, bud?
All right. So as we continue to move along here, I am going to take a man that turned a heel after turning face in 85. He was a heel. Turned heel again in 86. Kicked off a red hot feud with Hulk Hogan. Tons of heat. High-level guy, probably the biggest year name recognition for him in 1986, and that's Paul Orndorff. Again, bolstering
my list.
He's a heat machine in 86, and I can slot him right back in with his buddy Roddy Piper, too, if I want to do that.
Yeah, I can't. You know what, man? I can't argue with that pick. Paul Orndorff was really, really hot in 86, man.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I lived through it. He was a legit superstar.
All right, and my next pick is going to make our buddy Chad Campbell smile, because I'm going on potential here. He was set for a breakout year, 86-87, out of Florida, and Lex Luger gets a muscle.
Wow.
Get the look. get him up there, and you know, maybe he blossoms for him, becomes a star like he did in real life. Maybe he craps out. We'll find out. But drafting all pure potential on that one.
Okay, so you're drafting him with the hopes that I don't pick him this year, so I can really see him bloom in 87.
Right. So I'm thinking he comes in, works a little bit. Maybe he's a bodyguard for someone. We'll talk about it after the draft. But maybe he, maybe he works as someone's muscle, and then he eventually turns and debuts in the ring, something like that.
I have no problem with that. I'm going to go with one of my favorite wrestlers. This guy is a guy who can replace Valentine in the guy who can beat you up department. The man with the hands of stone, Ronnie Garvin, had a great 1986 in year, in the ring year. So I think Ron Garvin is going to help also replace the loss of Greg Valentine.
And now you don't have to sell me on him, but we'll talk after the draft, because I think there are going to be some listeners that may scratch their heads a little bit just based on the name. Now I'm with you, but I want you to explain a little bit later just how
Absolutely.
Good he was.
Oh yeah, I have no problem doing that whatsoever. And then I'm going to pick my second tag team here, mm-hmm. and I need another heel tag team with the Midnight Express just to make the tag division interesting. I'm going to pick the Rockers' main competitors in the AWA, and that's Buddy Rose and Doug Summers. And so I kind of want to recreate those bloody battles that these two teams had in 1986. So I have no problem picking one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, Buddy Rose, and lifetime jobber Doug Summers. No problem picking them.
Nice. All right. So that's good. Puts me in spot. I can hold off my tag teams yet again, like last time. So with my sixth pick to close out the sixth round, a guy I think I'm getting great value here. I kind of been waiting on him to see if he'd fall before I grabbed him. And I'm dipping back into the AWA. He was a champion into 86 a bit. And that is Stan Hansen. So I'm going to bring in the big bull there. And maybe set him up for a feud with Dusty, something along those lines.
Just remember, it was in 86 that Stan Hansen also left the AWA and ran over the belt before he returned it.
There you go. Badass. You know, even if he pisses me off, I'll keep him for a year and then dump him in 87.
There you go. Who's your next pick, bud?
All right. So my next pick here, as I go through my list, back and forth a bit, but you know me, I'm a sucker for heels. I love guys that could generate crazy heat. And I'm already eyeing my roster thinking, man, I got Piper. I got Tully Blanchard. I got Nick Bockwinkel. Paul Orndorff. All kind of a certain style of arrogant, douchebaggy kind of heel. And another guy that I think fits that mold, just without the look, but a real prick, is Larry Zbyszko. Another, I'm sticking to the AWA here.
Wow, yeah. And him and Bock had some fantastic matches in the AWA around this time. Larry Zbyszko was so despised, he turned lifelong heel Nick Bockwinkel into a face.
Well, we might be recreating that feud here in the JTWF, so we'll see. But I'm feeling good, even though I'm AWA heavy. I think I'm feeling all right.
You already came up with a name, huh?
I had one last time. I don't know if that was even what it was last time. I think I've changed it every time.
so I can be the National Will Alliance.
Or the WWF, the Will Wrestler. Might run into litigation with that. But
yeah, some pandas might chase me anyway. All right, so now we're on to my two?
Yep, you got pick 7 and 8. No, 6 Ooh. And 7 and 8. That's 3. Yep, 7 and 8.
Okay, well, I'm going to go with another heel who was insanely hot in 1986. So hot, they called him Hot Stuff.
Nice.
Classic angle with the Russians around this time, where he lays out Bill Watts, puts the Russian flag over Bill Watts. He is the definition of chicken shit, and that is Eddie Gilbert.
Nice, great pick. And now I want to ask you something before your next pick, because I want to get it out of the way now, this question, because I'm going to let you make the ruling, because we didn't mm-hmm. talk about this. If we drop a tag team, do we have to always have the same amount of tag teams? Like, so do I have to pick 3 to replace the one I dropped, or is it you just take 2 teams every time, no matter what?
I'm not going to define you either way, man. Okay. If you only want one more tag team.
Well, no, I definitely have to take two, right? We have to take two every time. But I dropped one, so do I have to take a third to replace it? I'm thinking yes. I think we should have to keep the tag teams even, right? Dan,
really?
What do you think as a ruling on that?
Dan's probably with the draft. Oh, sorry.
No, I know. I think you should at least do the two.
Yep.
I don't think doing. I think you'd just clog it up by and maybe just drafting for the sake of drafting another tag team.
Well, how about can you then if you drop a tag team, or is two max? Let's make sure we're all on the same page. So say I want to take three tag teams here.
If you take three tag teams, I'm not going to get pissed off.
Okay, so if you Seriously. I think if you drop a tag team, you don't have to take one, but you can take three the next year.
Sure. Let's not make this too complicated. Just,
all right. Just
pick away.
Make sure we're clear before I get all excited.
I like it.
Pick
and
away.
15 minutes to go, fellas.
Okay. All right, you got your next one though, Will, here. Pick number 8.
Oh, it's my turn?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, I wanted to ask there, so it wasn't right at my turn. I wanted to take a little breather. We'll go over the rules, and now we'll go back to you. Pick number 8.
Got you. Okay, well, number 8, I'm going to pick another guy who was really good, and people don't realize how good he was. Kind of had a down year in 1986, but I'm going to partially blame that on drugs, and we're going to get him out of that environment. And he's never going to become the natural that the WWF wanted, and that is Butch Reed. At one point in time, my pick for the best African-American wrestler to ever live.
I like that pick a lot, and I see it very similar, in similar vein to like my Luger pick, a guy that definitely easily has the potential to blossom and maybe gets protected early on.
Well,
and then,
well, he was already a huge star in Mid-South. Like in 84, 85, he was having Match of the Year contenders.
All right, so maybe I meant more from potential, more I guess the drug stuff, you know what I mean? So
because he did rebound a little bit with Ron Simmons as a member of Doom,
right? So you're catching him before all that, so I don't say potential, right? But the potential that you can kind of save him, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
So you can build him up to a legit maybe mainstream
right.
main eventer instead
exactly.
of a mid-card fodder with a bleach blonde hair.
Yep.
Who your last two, bud?
All right, well, I got three more here because I started, right? So I got
one. Oh, okay, yeah.
All right, and I'm going all tag teams, like I said, to round out since I dropped the Bulldogs. So right now, the only tag team on my roster are the Rock and Roll Express, but we're going to beef things up right now, and that is by starting with the Hart Foundation. Of course,
I teased
taking them last year. Didn't want to take them in 85, but I think 86 to 88 is a pretty solid stretch to have them for. You know, they were the top team in 87, the WWF. You get Bret Hart really starting to kind of find his way, and we're playing the power role. And I wanted kind of on the surface, they're not, overly powerful team, but I think based on who else I'm going to have on my roster, I think they fit in beautifully as kind of the heel base to the Fantastics at pick number 9.
Yes. So, rest in peace, Tommy Rogers.
Yes, recently passed away. So I love having them here. So now I kind of have the two... Yeah, BJ tag teams and the Rock and Roll Express and the Fantastics. I got the Hearts as my top heel team, and we'll leave that there for now. We'll let you pick your last two picks.
Interesting. Okay. I'm going to pick two guys who entertained me greatly in 1986 in Memphis. They started out, late 85, this guy kicked Jerry Lawler out of Memphis, beat him in a Loser Leaves Town match. That's Bill Dundee. And shortly, he was joined by the recently deceased Nature Boy Buddy Landell, and they became Bill and Boudreaux. And they did the Bill and Buddy show on Memphis television, one of the all-time classic skits. It was so bad that they turned on Dutch Mantell, and Dutch Mantell had to call Jerry Lawler to ask him to come back to Memphis to help him strike down the Bill and Buddy show. So, and unbelievable matches that year too. So, those are my final two picks: Bill Dundee and Buddy Landell for 1986.
All right, so I will take the very last pick here. Again, sticking in the tag division, but I like this team because I think it's a team that maybe eventually could go single. I know we can't separate them just yet, but I'm going to have them be groomed and set up that way. And then if I want to go, dump them and redraft this guy later, I can. And that is Manny Fernandez and Rick Rude. down from world class. They're going to come up, and they're going to be my other main heel team. So I get the Hearts, I get Fernandez and Rude, and then I get the Fantastics and the Rock and Rolls.
Ah, and I think a great team.
I think I've greatly improved my tag division from last year, from just the Bulldogs and the Express.
Oh, you have two natural heel teams, two natural just pure white meat BJ baby faces. You're in good shape in that tag division, man.
Yep, and again, a lot of 86, 85 I really went for a lot of name, high-level guys. 86 I really tried to draft on talent and versatility, guys that could kind of float either way, and
right.
A lot of heat machines and Orndorff and Zbyszko. Picked a little crazy up and Dusty and Gordy and Hansen, so I got some more brawlers. So I feel like my roster's got some more balance now that maybe I didn't have coming out of 85. So, Will, we got about, I think we got, what, Dan, made nine or 10 minutes left here?
10 minutes, yep. Yeah.
Okay. All right. You want to take a few minutes here, Will, and kind of talk about some of your ideas for your guys?
Sure. Well, if you look, I did pick guys on this round because we got a lot of the pure main eventers in our last round. And so what I really wanted were guys that were going to make the bottom of the card strong.
Yep.
So you can put Bill Dundee and Buddy Landell in the opening match. They're going to tear it up. Or you can put them in the main event in a Texas death match, and they're going to entertain you for a half hour. Kurt Hennig, this is the year he becomes a main eventer. So we're going to help him along the way. And who better than to work with guys like Savage, DiBiase, Slaughter, Murdoch? I mean, so he has plenty of people to kind of replace Nick Bockwinkel as that guy who leads him to the main event status. Then tag team wise, I already explained why I picked the Rockers and Rose Summers. One of the all-time classic feuds. I want to reinvent that here. Plus, if that gets a little stale, who wouldn't want to see the Rockers versus the original Midnight Express in their prime?
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
You know? Or who wouldn't want to see the Road Warriors kill Buddy Rose and Doug Summers?
Well, you just saved that for right before you dumped them in 87.
That's, exactly.
That'll be your big move.
Exactly. You nailed it right on the head. So you already knew who I'm going to dump in 87. So we had to go that route. I wanted, if you notice my earlier heel side, mainly guys who stand on their own. They may play chicken shit in the ring, but they're really just arrogant jerks. Okay, and that's why I had to get Eddie Gilbert. Mm-hmm. I needed that little chicken shit who can run away, and I think he works there. Butch Reed was a work rate pick. I really believe that something went wrong in 86 and 87 where Butch Reed just wasn't the same wrestler that he was in 84 and 85. So I really want to get him back on track. And Duggan, nobody can deny Jim Duggan is a draw. He's a name. And at this time, he was really a good brawler as well. So that's kind of where I went with this with draft. I wanted to strengthen my undercard. I knew I had a top-heavy main event scene. Now I want to really strengthen that mid-card and have people you can plug in all over the entire roster.
And, yeah, I'm with you with that. I think I had the same thing, kind of a lot of name value. I did try to fill out a little bit more by taking Rhodes.
Yeah, I think you increased your main event value more than I did on this round looking at it. I mean, Hansen, mm-hmm. Gordy, Rhodes, the huge main eventers. Larry Zbyszko.
And my thought here is, you know, because no Flair, so the Horseman never really existed in real life. So I think Tully Blanchard maybe starts his own little group here. And you can team up.
Ooh.
Tully. You can have Tully. You can have Orndorff, Larry. And then maybe Manny and Rude is like a big heel stable, or maybe you take them out. You put Luger in as the muscle here.
Yeah.
And then he eventually, you know, breaks out as a maybe turns face and turns on them when he starts getting tired of being just the muscle.
Can you imagine the Orndorff Luger flex contests? Oh,
there you
get out of here.
Well, I picture like Orndorff just treating him like a shit rookie, you know, for most of the year, and then Luger finally snaps and turns. And don't forget too, I got Barry Windham camped out here from 85,
yep.
Who could turn heel and join that stable as well. If you really want to have a vibrant stable, a stable of young heels,
yeah.
You know, picture Dusty and Andre working together on top in like big tag matches against maybe if Lawler turns heel, him and Piper, or maybe Hansen and Piper. You know, wild brawls with
four
guys.
Hansen versus Andre, classic feud from 1981.
There you go. Reinvent that one. You got Martel, you know, a top guy coming off of 85, but I think here, maybe he's almost pushed out because of the name value. So maybe he's down already, like I said, working with Tito a bit. You know, Martel and Bach, maybe, if I have Martel stay face. So I think I have guys versatile that can pop up another card, go face heel when I need them to. Rock and Roll Express, the Bulldogs get run out of the promotion. The Rock and Roll Express are my tag champs, but Fernandez and Rude steal the belts from them. The first night of the company, a little trickery. They steal the titles, and now the Hearts are kind of working against whoever's not chasing them. So the Fantastics and Rock and Roll Express can go around the horn
chasing them for the belts. That would be really rare because they were hardly, if ever, in the same promotion. I don't remember them being in the same promotion.
There you go, uniqueness.
Five minutes.
I think Watts may have booked them both in the same year, but always at like different times. But never there, you know, on TV doing angles and interviews at the same time. So that'd be unique to see the Fantastics and the Rock and Roll at the same time. Now, earlier you asked me about Ron Garvin. Like, why would I pick Ron Garvin?
Let's hear it.
Why would I pick him so high? Now, a lot of people remember Ron Garvin for his aborted world title run in 1987. Okay. What people fail to realize is, one, he had great matches with Ric Flair that year. Okay. The cage match where he won the belt was a great match, legitimate match of the year. The Starrcade match, they had botched, and I've always blamed this on the booking of Ron Garvin during his world title run. When he was the champion, he would come on to the TV, do an interview, and then do an opening match against the jobber with the world title belt. But it was still, hey, if you want to see Ric Flair, you have to go to the arena. But with Ron Garvin, it's like, you can see him on TV. He's not a big deal. It wasn't so much that Ron Garvin won the belt. It was how they treated him once he won the belt. Do you understand where I'm coming from?
Yep.
And so I think you really have to blame Dusty or Flair, whoever was in charge of booking Ron Garvin at that time. You really have to blame them for the way that they treated him as world champion. Even when Dusty would get his like 2 week runs, they treated the belt more importantly than they did when Ron Garvin had it for like what, 4 months or something, 5 months, 3 months, whatever it was. So I really think they missed the boat on Ron Garvin. He had just come off a hot angle where the Midnight Express had burned his face on national TV, and it helped turn Jimmy Garvin face. I don't know if you remember that angle.
Mm-hmm.
The year before, he had been in hot programs with Big Bubba. He had been in hot programs with Arn, Tully, teamed with Wahoo. This was a guy who could do it all. You could put him in the mid-card.
You could dress him in drag.
You could dress him in drag. Miss Atlanta Lively, of course. Here's a guy, though, but if you wanted him to main event the Coliseum with Ric Flair, he's going to main event the Coliseum with Ric Flair. Very versatile and a great wrestler. Great wrestler that really doesn't get his due. And so I have no problem picking Ron Garvin.
Hands of stone. All right, Dan, where are we with time?
You've reached the 2-minute warning.
All right, that sounds like just enough time for you to tell us now, with these enhanced rosters, what show are you going to tonight?
You know, last time I think I went with Will right away because I really love the Savage DiBiase tandem at the top. I really like what Will's done with the tag teams. I was going to bring up the points about the Midnight Rockers and the Midnight Express and the Road Warriors, and I just think that's pretty cool. Like the heels there, but I'm looking over at your roster there, JT, and I maybe it's the sentimentality of Dusty Rhodes and all the different tributes we've heard over the last few weeks, but I like that pick a lot. I was kind of asking what happened with Dusty Rhodes in 85, that neither one of you guys picked him then, but I like Rick Martel. I like the combination of Strikeforce on your roster. I like Orndorff. I was like, okay, maybe Orndorff will get a chance to have a run with a big title in your promotion. Hanson and Giant was a cool pairing. I've always been a Larry Zbyszko guy, so I think I'm going to give a little bit of a nudge to JT for 1986.
Talking into the building, baby, Dan McGinn. Welcome.
I don't even hate you for that, Dan. Like, I'm not even mad at you because you can tell that JR really focused on shoring up that main event lineup there. So I don't even blame you for that. Like I said, my goal this round was to strengthen the undercard. I thought I had enough main eventers on top where I could throw a lot of mid-card guys that are capable of working main event programs in there. So I have no problem with your pick there, Dan, for this week. For this week only, though. For this week only.
It's only show three. I hope you don't hate me by now. It's a little too soon for that.
It usually takes about a year before you hate Dan.
Show 26, man. You're out the door, Dan.
That's what I was going to say now. I was going to make some kind of comment about Andre the Giant. I think we're both set up for strong 87s, too, with a lot of the young guys we took here. That would be set up to really break out, I think, in 87. So I think we both have a good balance of current star power, but guys that are set up for big years in 87.
Yeah, and I already know who I'm dropping for 87, too, so no surprise there.
Rose and Summers.
Well, that's one of them.
Thanks for coming.
Nice cup of coffee. Anyway,
Fellas, cue the horn because time is up.
Okay, not bad, though. We right to the buzzer. So the draft in the book. So next episode, Will, I think we'll come back. We'll do 87 and finish this 3-year arc, and then we'll have to decide the rules headed to 88. So,
yeah, and you know, we had fun. The only thing I regret is not being able to make our fantasy cards this week. But you know, we got to manage 20 guys next week. Maybe we can do it with 30. Who knows?
Maybe we'll drop more than 2 next week. We'll see. It'll make it real tough. Don't forget those 4 that were dropped come back and play in 87 as well. So. All right, why don't we go ahead and take a break, listen to some of the great shows on the Place to Be podcast feed here at placetobenation.com, and when we return, it'll be time for fall. You can crush us, you can bruise us, but you'll have to answer too.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Events, which features roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport featuring Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Sound hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PTBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net. Okay, Place to Be Nation, we are back here. Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast, Episode 3. Fall number 1 is in the books. It's a big draft night, of course. Night of the NBA draft going on, and we have year 2 of our 3-year wrestling promotion arc, 86 in the books. And it is now time, Will, for fall number 2. So we'll bring Dan McGinn back in to tell us what the challenge will be.
A long December, and there's reason to believe maybe this year will be better than the last.
I can't remember. Fellas, our second fall is called Rewriting History, and we're going to rewrite the history that was WWF December of 1996.
All right, so this is a cool game because instead of focusing on like a what if like we did in episode 1, where you're looking at, you know, specific guys, or you're trying to rebook feuds or cards, we're taking a month in company history. And it's an interesting month because it's a month where a lot of change was going on in late 96. The whole year of 96 was filled with tons of change in the World Wrestling Federation. But December specifically, because Bret Hart had just come back, Steve Austin was on the rise. It was the beginning of their transition from having a main guy on top with a monthly challenger to all of a sudden having like a group of guys battling for the title. And that was where we head into 97. But December 96, while that potential was there and a lot was going on, also had a real lot of missteps and a lot of, and Will's going to dive into this in a second, but a lot of guys that were really miscast and wasted on the roster in what could have turned a pretty dull month into a pretty hot month when you look at who they have. So we're picking up on December 1st. We're going to take you right through the end of the year and set you up for 97. So, Will, why don't you kick us off? What are your first kind of couple things you're looking at here as we start to rebook the year?
Well, when you look at 1996 and you're looking at December, some of the things just stand out right away. First of all, this is full-blown fake Diesel and fake Razor Ramon era, okay? And so there's absolutely no reason that these guys should have been on the card. I don't know if you heard the podcast, but Jericho had a podcast where Bischoff and Bruce Pritchard were debating the Monday Night Wars. And Bruce Pritchard said that the only reason that they had fake Diesel and fake Razor was to help them with their lawsuit to prove that they owned the characters.
Yes.
So when I heard that, I was like, oh my God, they did this horrible angle, wasted valuable TV time to put over the fact that they owned the characters. Just petty Vince crap. Right? There's no excuse to put that on TV. Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely correct. And I just want to quickly call out the champions. So Sid is our WWF champion.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Hunter Hearst Helmsley is our Intercontinental champion.
Not ready.
Our tag champions are Owen Hart and the British Bulldog. So I just wanted to lay those out as we move forward. But
there you go. And so, okay. So another gimmick that stands out, T.L. Hopper. This is T.L. Hopper.
Yep.
I don't know. Are you familiar with the Dirty White Boy?
I can't say I've seen a ton of his stuff, but I know him well from the aftermags growing up. Like, yeah. They had tons of stuff on him.
Well, if you ever get a chance to watch Smoky Mountain Wrestling, Dirty White Boy was a great wrestler. In the 80s, he was part of a tag team called the Dirty White Boys. And then he went on to become just the Dirty White Boy. And he was a main eventer in Smoky Mountain Wrestling under Jim Cornette. Granted, that's a territorial thing. The guy is not a good-looking wrestler, does not have a great body. But he is a good wrestler. And they made him a plumber.
Well, yeah, even if they had him in the same role, just without the name and gimmick, if they just kept him who he was, would have been more effective. Because don't forget, they brought all these guys in from Smoky Mountain in 96. And I always loved the way they went with this. They brought him in to help develop the other guys on the roster. Like the young guys
sure.
that were coming in, they were basically put into instant jobber to the star role. So they would work on like superstars and pick up wins over jobbers, and then go to Raw and put over the name talent, which I liked. I thought it was shrewd. You know, Alex Porto, Sal Sincere, like all those guys came in, and Freddie Joe Floyd, Tracy Smothers, which that's a whole other can of worms.
Yeah, that was the next one I was going to say. Sal Sincere, Tom
yep.
Brandy.
Yep.
You know, here's a good looking guy, right? Good body. Average at best worker, probably subpar worker. But really Salvador Sincere, just horrible outfit, horrible gimmick. Just in a way, you get the feeling that they didn't put a lot of thought into these gimmicks. You know, one part of you thinks that they overthought it, but the other part makes, no, they didn't overthink it. They didn't put enough thought it, period.
And I think their goal could have been better accomplished if they kept them as their name. You know, like Tracy
yeah.
Smothers putting over a guy is better than, Freddie Joe Floyd. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
So, yeah, they could have used him in the same role. Just why give him these stupid gimmicks that makes it even goofier?
Right. And this was still kind of an era. I mean, we're moving away from using jobbers. You know, we're moving away from that era of using like local guys who get destroyed. But at the same time, they didn't build any of these guys up for anyone to care if they got beat or not.
Right.
You know,
they built them up a little bit, but not nearly enough.
Yeah, and we're not going to spend our time all of our time just talking about the horrible gimmicks, although we're going to go through several more. We're going to get to the title picture and who they're pushing in a second. But I have to address another misuse of a guy who came in, and that's Too Cold Scorpio as Flash Funk.
Mm-hmm.
To me, this is complete out of touch Vince character work. You know, if you look at like when you look at Brodus Clay coming out to his horrible theme song, right? When Brodus Clay was there,
yep.
The original idea for Brodus Clay was not to be a dancing dinosaur.
Right.
The original idea was for him to be kind of a cool hip hop star, you know, because he had been a bodyguard for Snoop Dogg or something. And the idea was that his girls would kind of be like his girls that are in like rap videos. He was supposed to come out to rap music. But Vince McMahon can do that. No, you got to have somebody who's dancing, you know. If it's a black guy, even better. And that's really what the idea is, right? Flash Funk.
Yep.
It's such a horrible gimmick. It's vaguely racist. It's just another dancing black man, but it's so out of touch with what was going on in the 90s.
Now, in fairness, Too Cold Scorpio's gimmick had been dancing for a long time, right? I mean, I know the overall trope.
Uh-huh. But to Funk?
No, definitely not.
Was he dancing?
Look, I'm not defending in any way. I'm not saying that they're not racist with their gimmick. I mean, they surely are.
Yeah.
But Scorpio's definitely was. The music changed, but his dance moves, if you watch like the Flash Funk dance moves versus like Too Cold Scorpio, they're all the same. Like, he didn't really change much.
Yeah. And to be fair, right, he was doing Whoop, There It Is like 5 years after the song was out, you know. That's not the point.
No, I know.
The point is, he could have been Too Cold Scorpio, which sounds much cooler than Flash Funk to me. Too Cold Scorpio in ECW was a great heel,
mm-hmm.
you know? And he had flashy enough offense where he could have been a great face.
Right.
But they never saw him pass that mid-card jobber to the stars level. And I think it's a tragedy, man. I think Scorpio, you know, I mentioned earlier that I thought Butch Reed might be the best African-American wrestler of all time. The only other guy that I would argue could be above him is Too Cold Scorpio. Because at his peak, he was one of the most amazing wrestlers to come out of the 90s. He really was.
And even the name, you can maybe, you know, survive. I think the bigger issue was the gear. Like that stupid suit that was like half unzipped down to his waist or whatever. And then those big floppy boots. Like, to me, that was the real killer. Like, coming out with chicks and the name flat, like, whatever. I think you can survive that. The look, though, was like really hard to overcome. Like, it was just a look that was not going to get you anywhere.
No, I agree with that too. But that's Vince McMahon being out of touch, you know. That's and let's look at a guy he wrestled on the pay per view this month. Al Snow as Leaf Cassidy, Christ, coming from two heartthrobs from the 1970s, Leaf Garrett and David Cassidy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not creative. You know what I mean? That this Al Snow. No favors.
Well,
now, if you
and
make
if they
him
had...
part of the Rockers, right? Wasn't he, him and Jannetty part of the new Rockers at this time?
Right, and that's what I was going to say. Like, so they had been that for pretty much the whole year. I think he came in like March. Even by this point, now Jannetty pretty much left after Survivor Series. I think he busted his knee up. Why not have him, you know, disown the name and the gimmick? And they kind of have him do go crazy into early '97. He starts like yelling at the announcers and everything else. But why not do that earlier? And have him drop the name with it in the Rocker gear too. I mean, that was a golden opportunity. And if you look at this time period, they really...
Well, hold on. When did he go out? This might have been later during the Job Squad era. When did he go out on TV and like in the Avatar mask? And
I think he did it a couple. I think he did do it around here, because there's a period where he's Leaf Cassidy and he goes crazy right before he leaves and goes back to ECW, and then he comes back in. Like late 98 is Al Snow. Well, mid 98 and then late 98 full time. And I think he does. I don't know. I know he goes crazy as Al Snow as well. And then he comes out as Leaf Cassidy 1 week and then Avatar again. Hey, do you remember Dan at all? Do you remember if he did Avatar while he was still Leaf Cassidy when he was like going crazy?
I don't remember that, but it's around, like, I think it was maybe even 95 that I think the Avatar stuff was going on.
Well, no, that's when he was Avatar. But then he did a thing later where he went, like, crazy and got pissed off and, like, brought out the mask and, like, yelled about it and stuff. I feel like that was in, like, 97, Will, when he was still Leaf.
Yeah,
but anyway,
okay. Yeah. Even maybe later, like, it doesn't matter. The point is, Vince is out of touch. And finally, the last gimmick I really want to point to is Terry Gordy is the executioner.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way in hell Terry Gordy should have been in a ring at that time.
Right.
No, I'm serious.
No, I know. He looked awful. Not well.
I actually like the executioner gimmick. You know, I'm one of the few people on earth. Did you ever see Billy Jack Haynes as was it Bad Blood?
Yep.
Or you remember that?
Yep.
It was Bad Blood, right?
Yep.
Is that his name? Okay. I actually like the executioner gimmick. A evil guy with an axe and a executioner's mask.
He was Bad Blood, the wrestler, and then he became a pay-per-view later, Billy Jack Haynes.
There you go. and certifiably insane, too.
Yes,
but anyway, but I was all for that, you know? But give me someone under that mask, one who you could really think is a threat to The Undertaker. You know, because no one thought Terry Gordy at that time in his career was a threat to The Undertaker.
I mean, he's lumbering around, he's overweight, and for good reason, of course, the brain damage and everything else that happened at that point.
Yeah, man. I mean, it just, you know, it was just, it's one of those things in wrestling, and we get criticized as wrestling fans for investing time in this hobby or whatever, but it's one of those things that makes you sit back and say, what's it all for?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, get this guy some medical help. What the hell are you doing exploiting this guy on TV?
And they didn't even call him Terry Gordy. So, like, what value did they really get from it? You know what I mean? They're dragging him out there. They don't ever acknowledge that it's him. Anybody could have played the role. I mean, anybody. Unless they really just felt bad for the guy and wanted to give him a... I don't know. I don't get the reasoning. But I'm with you. I think the idea could have been good if they had someone that could work still under the mask. But also, they just spent half the year watching what a guy like, you know, Mick Foley could do to rejuvenate The Undertaker. Why wouldn't you bring someone in to work under the mask that could do the same? Like, why not? Why go back to sandbagging him? You know what I mean? Like, we just saw how good he can now be again with a guy like Foley that could really push him. And to an extent, Goldust, I guess. I mean, they had some boring matches. But whatever. It's working a bit more. Versus, and then just bringing this old lumbering guy and instantly just sandbag Undertaker again.
You know, not to say that he was a great worker, but Justin Bradshaw was right there on the roster. Big guy.
Right.
You know, has nasty offense. Not saying that he could have gotten a lot out of Undertaker at that point in his career, but he would have been a lot better than Terry Gordy.
Well, how about a guy that would get a lot of Undertaker in his career? Glenn Jacobs. He was under contract too. It was Fake Diesel.
No, I hate Kane. I think Glenn Jacobs is horrible. Sorry.
He would have been better than what Gordy was doing at this point.
No, he wasn't, because when he was Kane, they had horrible matches. Like, every other WrestleMania, I had to sit through those horrible Kane-Taker matches.
Oh, they fought twice. Oh. Like, 6 years apart.
When we do live in the gimmick Glenn Jacobs, okay, we'll talk about him. I hate him. I cannot stand Glenn Jacobs.
All right, how about Rick Bogner? Would that have been better for you?
Yeah, there you go. It's pretty sad when your career peaks as the Una Bomber, okay? But anyway, the other guy I want to touch on is a guy that they debuted at Survivor Series, and that's The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
He comes out as Rocky Maivia. I have no problem with that. But like you were talking about the way they dressed up Flash Funk, what the hell was this guy wearing? What was cool about that in 1996?
Nothing.
It looked ridiculous. It was stupid. And no wonder the fans turned on the guy.
You almost think.
You know, and we turned out.
And I know it's not the case at all, but they book him so badly that it almost seems like they wanted the fans to turn on him. But, I mean, I know it's not the case, but that's how awful he looked.
And right.
They had everyone just fawning over him, from, you know, our buddy Kevin Kelly to Sonny to Vince McMahon, who were having the same reactions for him. I don't know. It was just such a push down the throat of Rocky Maivia, and he didn't have nearly... I mean, he had the charisma in ring. He was still very green, but Again, sure. Someone that would have better look probably could have helped them. But I'd argue they didn't even really necessarily need him, because I think they had the horses. They just were miscast.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned a bunch of guys like the ECW guys, and it intrigues me because it was around this time they were starting to get a little edgier. If you remember, in October, November, they started doing the tough man fights where they would have like no rules. It was like Mankind and Austin had one, and then Vader, and they had these matches where they were called no holds barred matches, and they made a big deal.
So this was pre Brawl for All?
Yes, and it was just matches, right? So it was just tough man matches where they called it that, but it's basically a no DQ ECW style match where they could fight all over, and they built it up as like who's the toughest man kind of thing. And it was supposed to be Vader and Austin the night after Survivor Series, but Vader got hurt, so they did Mankind and Austin, and then I think they eventually did the Vader one later. And
So this takes us to part two, which is the booking.
Yes,
during December.
Yep.
Now you said Vader got hurt after Survivor Series.
Yes, he hurt his, I'll say like his fibula or tibula, one of those things, tibia, and he hurt part of it. I think it was his leg coming out of Survivor Series. I feel like it was when Yoko, like, gave him a slam or something, and he landed funny on his heel or his leg and hurt it. Because he's out for a little bit. Because remember, the story, too, is that It's Time was named for him, and then the booking leaked, and they switched it to Sid, and then he got hurt.
Okay, I did not know that.
Actually, so it's right here. So Graham Cawthon has it. So on November 18th, Steve Austin defeated Mankind, subbing for Vader in a no-holds-barred match when Paul Bearer was backstage and the executioner out. Footage was shown of Yokozuna injuring Vader the previous night at Survivor Series, said he'd be out of action for a little bit.
Okay. So
actually, it looks like he's back by the middle of December, so he didn't miss
much
time.
He is, because now I don't know when this was taped, to be fair, but on the December 9th edition of Raw, he's getting pinned by Psycho Sid in a minute 40 after they had a pretty decent match at the Buried Alive pay-per-view.
So that had to be, was that a dark match? Because according to this, on air was Sid against Hunter via countout.
Okay, I got my results from Graham. I don't know.
Sometimes he lists them as
World Champion Psycho Sid pinned Vader at 1 minute and 40 seconds with the power slam.
I think that's a dark match.
It is. You're right.
All
right. Okay, you know why? Because right above it, guess what it says, JR? Dark match after the tape.
There you go. Gives it away.
You know.
Because it looks like Vader returns officially on the 16th. That Raw.
Okay.
He fights Austin in the Tough Man.
So early on, Raw is, there's nothing special about Raw at this time. Because on the other channel, on Nitro, you have the hot NWA angle. As much as the matches get criticized, you had a really hot Roddy Piper versus Hulk Hogan program. You had the cruiserweights, the luchadors tearing it up on the undercard, the midgets, you know, your Benoits and Malinkos and Guerreros. Man, WCW was really hot at this time. And you're going to counter Starrcade 96 with Sid versus
Brett,
okay, which was not a good match.
No, but I will say this in their defense. As a recently turned 16-year-old, remember, Sid was super over.
Sid has always been over.
But especially
but it's never
here.
Translated to box office.
I know,
never
but this was his hottest period, right? This was maybe the closest he ever got, other than maybe his last like WCW year. But remember, he came back in July to replace the Warrior, and people were just out of their minds for him, and that's why they ended up kind of hot-shotting to make him champion. And I remember actually being really excited, and it might have just been because Brett had just come back and I was excited to see him. You know, Sid was pretty hot. He was on a roll. So I think I don't blame them for going that route, because at the time it felt like a pretty big match. But they have better options.
but there are better options. Yeah. For one example, The Undertaker defeating The Executioner. We already talked about this. Horrible match, right? The match is embarrassing. You could have easily put Undertaker with Bret. They have good matches. Bret can get good matches out of The Undertaker. Okay. Or you could have... I would hate to do this. You know what? Get rid of the Undertaker Psycho Sid program. Don't save it for Mania, because it was a horrible match. You know, the hindsight being 2020. But it was obviously a match that didn't sell anyway, right? Sid versus Undertaker did not sell. One of the worst WrestleMania buy rates that they've ever had.
Ten minutes, guys.
It was a proven failure.
So who do you have Taker win the title, or do you keep it on Sid to still work towards Shawn regaining it at the Rumble?
I don't put the belt back on Shawn.
Okay, not even to sell out San Antonio.
Well, no, and here's why. Because he was proven a failure as champion, too. Yeah. I'm not saying the booking helped him. But he wasn't a draw as champion.
Right, and he doesn't sell out San Antonio. they had to paper the whole thing.
Yeah, I know. I could have gone for free. But at the time, the card was so unappealing to me, I passed. Because the nightclub I worked at, they had free tickets. They were giving away tickets, like, you know, when the DJ would do drawings or whatever. And I passed. I was like, I don't want to go. I'd rather go to work and make money that night, you know, than go watch this pay per view. That's how bad it was. And the opening match was Flash Funk defeats Leaf Cassidy. Okay,
this is a good match. I mean, you could argue good it's the match of the night.
Yeah. Yeah, easily could argue that. But then you're wasting your tag champs, Owen Hart and Davey Boy, with fake Razor and fake Diesel. Right. Are you telling me that we couldn't come up with 3, 4, 5 better tag teams than these two?
Well, you had Furnace and LaFon there already, and I know they were kind of saving that a bit for later, but still.
Yeah, and they weren't really over. So, I mean, but even then, I mean, if there were two guys in need of gimmicks, Furnace and LaFon were probably it.
Right.
You know,
make them Teal Hopper and Sal Sincere as a team.
No, just give them something better than Furnace and LaFon. Oh, man. You know,
what about the Godwins? And hear me out.
The Godwins.
Huh?
Go. I hate them, but go.
I know, but are they better than fake Razor and Diesel? Because here you have this, like, two heel teams, and they're doing this weird thing with Owen and Bulldog where they're kind of feuding, but they're not while they're champs. And remember, Austin was coming out and attacking Bulldog, but not Owen, and he actually comes out during this match, and he clips Bulldog's knee, and that's what leads to the countout. Or actually, they end up winning the match, so he clips Bulldog's knee on the ringside. But the crowd seems really split on this one, and they kind of go against the desired reaction where they have Owen and Bulldog kind of getting cheered. At least the Godwins are a face team. They've been in the title picture for a lot of the year. You already had Owen and Bulldog kind of dispatch of the guns back in the fall, then they split up. The Rockers are gone because Jannetty busted his knee. Body Donners are gone because Candido busted his neck. So all your big teams, and I use big with the biggest, you know, Dan McGinn quotation fingers in the world, those were the top teams from 96, as sad as it was. So they've kind of dispatched all them, so why not kind of polish the Godwins off as well and bust them out? Now, there is another team they could have brought back a little bit earlier than they did. They come back in February. And I don't know if you know where I'm going. That's the Legion of Doom.
Sure.
So maybe bring them back a little bit early and have them challenge here as a surprise if you really want to try and at least inject some energy into this card.
I wonder if there's a contractual thing there. Where was the Legion of Doom at in December? Because they were in WCW in 96, right? Early 96?
Very early, yeah, like March. So I don't I can try and look it up here quick. But they come back in February for that. And I think it was supposed to only be a one-off as well. They came back when a lot of the roster was in overseas on that special Raw, the ECW Raw in the Manhattan Center in February of 97. They stayed with WCW for 6 months before leaving with a dispute over Eric Bischoff. They promised a separate contract from Japan. They took various independent bookings in the U.S. and Japan before signing. So it doesn't sound like they were doing much at the end of the year.
Was Goldust the face by this time?
He turns in December. This is when Lawler starts mocking him, remember? Calling names. And
So maybe you have Goldust team with somebody who can work, like a Too Cold Scorpio. And I've already stated many times on many podcasts that Dustin Rhodes is one of the best tag team workers that's ever been around. Just you put that guy in a tag team, he makes it work. Whether it's Goldust and Booker T, Goldust and Cody, Dustin and Barry, Dustin and Steamboat, the guy knows how to work a tag match.
And why not throw Smothers with, you know, freaking Rhodey there, Jesse James. I mean, you know, the Armstrong Smothers, you know.
Yeah, they both work that Southern style, and Jesse James could work in Memphis. Mm-hmm. It's shocking how much better in Memphis Road Dogg was than he was in WWF. Same thing with Brian Christopher. Brian Christopher was a great heel and a great worker in Memphis, and gets to WWF and he's all shtick. You know?
I mean, a guy
really disappointed.
Daniel. 5 minutes, guys. 5 minutes.
A guy that, you know, look, I'm not going to say he should have been anywhere, but I'm just trying to come up with anything better than Razor and Diesel. Right. Jake Roberts, over, you know, kind of coming at the end of his run. He was at Survivor Series. Why not team him? You got Barry Windham, too. Remember, he was the Stalker. So,
oh, God, yeah.
And they had just teamed at Survivor Series. So, I mean, you know, you're not going to get a great match out of them, but whatever. Why not do that? Why not do Jake and... And remember, Jake had feuded a little bit with Bog and Owen, too, earlier in the year. So maybe you kind of revisit that and you have him team with Wyndham against them to challenge for the titles. Anything would have been better than Razor.
Bradshaw was there, yeah. And Bradshaw could work in a decent tag match. So,
all right, so we only got 5 minutes, less than five, Will. So I just want to ask you two questions here. So one,
sure.
What will you go with now if you have to book your top three matches on this pay-per-view? Question number two, who is your world champion coming out of the month? And we didn't talk about the IC title at all, so I'm going to be a minute on that with Hunter being the champion. Remember, he had screwed Mero with the turn of Mr. Perfect. Perfect left the promotion, and now Hunter's kind of on his own with the chicks.
As a booker looking at it, I'm not even mad with the Mero, Hunter, Goldust grouping there in the IC title hunt. You know, I think ideally... You know, you have Steve Austin coming off the best match at Survivor Series. We haven't even talked about Steve Austin.
He's not even on the card here.
Not even on the card. Why can't you have, you know, because if you want to say that, like, the Bret Hart-Steve Austin match propels Bret because he won the match into the world title picture, right?
Yep.
You know, I don't know if I would have had Sid win the belt. You know, at this point in time, with Shawn Michaels, was he hurt?
No, he takes the month off to kind of recharge. Remember, he does like the kind of fake heel turn a bit, and then he ends up just going back to pure.
See, I would have probably, you know, just said, hey, man, we'll let you recharge in January, you know, and you can be the host of Royal Rumble, you know, in your hometown. And I don't know, maybe he's in a better position where he doesn't lose his smile and he can actually perform at WrestleMania. And then you have Bret Hart beat Shawn Michaels. You never drop the belt to Sid. If you want to keep Sid hot, man, have him destroy somebody in 2 minutes, but not Vader, you know?
Right.
What
about two, if they would have done Austin Mankind, no holds barred match on the paper.
Austin Mankind could have been hot. Right. Yeah. But you know what?
Maybe you force Austin in a preview of what's to come in 97. Maybe you do the force where you have Austin be forced to find a partner to team with him against Bulldog and Owen.
Well, if you're insisting on Sid being there, why not do a Mankind Sid? Because if there's somebody who can bump and get Sid's offense over, it certainly is Foley. Right?
2 minutes, 2 minutes.
What do you think of that idea with Austin, though, where you force him? He's desperate.
Oh, I like it.
You know,
maybe
he picks up Vader, or maybe he picks up you know, some Gold, whoever. He's forced into taking a part. If he wants, you know, Bulldog and Owen, I want you. I hate the Hart family. I want to take the tag titles. I'd go it alone. Basically what they did in 97, where they made him forced to be partners with Michaels.
Force him into a tag team with Goldust, and because then you're almost guaranteed a great match.
Right.
You know, you're almost guaranteed a great match if they give it time. I'm not mad with Mero and Hunter for the IC title. I wouldn't mind, like I said, having Michaels versus Bret and then doing Sid versus
Mankind,
you know, because if you're insisting on Sid getting over. And then, you know, I think you have Bret as champion. And then if you want to screw Bret later on, screw Bret, you know, do that great 1997 run. If people want to know, there's something that we're never going to do on this show is rebook 1997 Hope Foundation. Because it's some of the greatest episodic
or Montreal.
TV.
We're not touching Montreal.
Yeah, we're not going to go.
But only us, Will, can take one of the most bland months in history. And I mean, I don't think we even scratched. I think we have a lot more we could cover
easily. But we've already improved it just by getting rid of the stupid and gimmicks. We're already showing WCW. You're not the only one who can be edgy.
And I don't think it was even a stretch, because I know you might look at the service and say, well, WWF didn't do that, but I think this is the one time period where they may have, because they were so desperate and because ECW was really catching on, and they kind of were edging that way anyway with the blurred lines. And even though Attitude doesn't start for another year, there's a lot of it. If you look at early 97...
The Bret Hart tirade is like less than a month from this.
And like I said, too, this is the first time they really strayed from having a top dog champion with a set challenger month by month and having this whole conglomeration of guys battling. For, you know, they had Sid, they had Taker, they had Vader, Mankind. You know, they had all these guys clearly in the world title picture fighting over the title. And that leads to Final Four and the end of the Rumble. So, I mean, this is the first time in a while they've had like six or seven legit top contenders. And
sure. And the real goal, like I said, the real goal is to keep Shawn Michaels on the WrestleMania card.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even saying he needs to be the guy to draw for the show, but he needs to be on the card.
Right.
You know, because
and Austin, Austin should be on the card too. I mean, one of the hottest.
Oh,
guys.
Austin Brett should have been the main event after that match of Survivor Series. Whoever was watching that match should have realized this is the match I want people to remember. I want this to be the last image they see is a bloody Austin and Brett walking off pissed off. That should have ended WrestleMania. I don't care how WrestleMania ended and Brett came out and screwed over.
So maybe you have Brett. Maybe you go pretty paint by numbers. Maybe you have Brett win the title from Sid here. Like, well, Sid could get his big win at Survivor Series. You have Brett take the title back here. And then you have Austin win the Rumble without any shenanigans. And you just do Brett Austin for the strap at Mania.
Yeah, or you have Austin do his shenanigans. I don't even care. But yeah.
Or you could put me on the card because your time is up, guys.
Oh, man.
Well, there you go. December 96, WWF apparently is tons to talk about, but we'll do this again in a few more episodes. We'll pick another. You know, I kind of like picking these, you know, forgotten months because I think there's a lot to churn. If you pick the big months, it's not as fun. So
I've been there, done that. That's why we're going to dig stuff out of the crates here on this show.
That's right. Dig stuff out of McGinn's basement. So why don't we go ahead? We'll take a break, listen to some of the great shows on the PWO PTBN network, all the other great podcasts here. We'll come back with the third fall and some mail. And until then, we'll be right back.
Place to Be Nation and Pro Wrestling Only are proud to present the PWO PTBN Podcast Network. Join us for a variety of great shows that explore all the facets of professional wrestling.
Join good old Will from Texas for our Place to Be Nation reaction shows and Goodwill Wrestling, which has been kicking since before JR had barbecue sauce.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play and join Chad and Parv as they discuss classic NWA and WCW pay-per-view.
And take in one of our newest podcasts, Exile on Bed Street, and allow Chris Zellner to give you a history lesson about important moments in wrestling's colorful past.
Listen to Johnny, Pete, Parv, and Kelly, the titans of wrestling, as they examine in depth the history of the WWF in the 1970s and 1980s.
And then there's Brainbuster, the wrestling game show, Tag Teams Back Again, the Pro Wrestling Super Show, the All Japan Excite Series, and the Super Extreme Vault for some ECW.
You can hear all of these great podcasts and more on one feed. Remember, PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network, part of the Place to Be Nation family.
All right, Place for Nation, we're back. Episode 3 of the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast. JT, Will, and Dan with you. Two falls are in the books. We've redrafted 1986. We have booked December 1996 in the WWF. And now, Dan, share with us where we're headed for our third fall.
Our third and decisive fall is called Americana, guys. In the spirit of the 4th of July just around the corner, let's talk some patriotic gimmicks, perhaps even some Hacksaw Jim Duggan for our boy Scotty C.
Okay, so, Will, we were coming with the concept of the show and the different kind of challenges. We said we want to remain topical, whether it's pay-per-views that happen, you know, WrestleMania, SummerSlam, Rumble, or holidays. So 4th of July, of course, is right around the corner from when the show will air, about a week away. So I thought we could take some time, take a half hour here, and talk about our favorite Americana-based angles and wrestlers. What do you think?
Sure.
All right, so right out of the gate, maybe a little association game. Who is the first guy you think of when you think of wrestling and Americana?
Come on, man. Guy just passed away. You can't think of Americana without the American Dream. And I don't want this to be a Dusty tribute segment here, but you have to say Dusty Rhodes is the first guy that you think of. When you told me about this game, JR, I was thinking, wow, this is a clever way to have a Dusty discussion on this show.
And we're not. So what we're going to do right now, though, I think, is because we love Randy.
We will mention Dusty more in this segment, though, that is for sure.
We will, and the reason we're going to is I think we should do a little bit of, because we like ranking, we like challenges, why don't we do a little Americana wrestler power rankings, maybe like a top 10 American-based gimmicks and wrestlers, and then maybe we can do like a match or a show, too, from there.
Well, first we have to list the guys, right, before we rank them.
Okay, so let's make a pool here. So, Dan, if you don't mind jotting these down on our document.
We got Dusty Rhodes.
Yes.
Who's the first guy that comes to your mind besides Dusty Rhodes?
Hulk Hogan, obviously. And,
there you go.
Kurt Angle.
Okay, so there's two and three. Kurt Angle, Hulk Hogan. I'm going to go with the Patriot.
Yep.
Del Wilkes.
Him. Yep. How about the Patriots, Firebreaker Chip?
And Todd Champion. Yeah.
Let's put them in there. Sergeant Slaughter, of course.
Ooh, good one, Sergeant. You know what? I didn't even think of Sergeant Slaughter.
Duggan. Jim Duggan.
Hacksaw Jim Duggan, yes.
Corporal Kirchner.
Corporal Kirchner.
Who's the... who's the?
I want to... I'll go.
No, the guy, Ranger Ross. Put Ranger Ross in there.
Oh, I wasn't thinking of Sergeant Ranger Ross.
Well, there's a great Ranger Ross story on the where the big boys play Super Brawl 2 episode. They talk about how he went nuts and was on the run in the woods or something like that, and then now he's some kind of motivational speaker or something like that. So Parvin,
that's hilarious. Okay, let's throw Ranger Ross on there. I'm gonna go with a guy who defended America against the Russians. That's Bill Watts.
There you go, good one. How about Dan Spivey, wasn't he like Mr. USA or something, the WWF? Or, well, maybe
no,
U.S. Express.
No.
Let's go with the U.S. Express.
There you go. It was Rotunda, Wyndham, and Spivey at different points in time were the U.S. Express. Very good.
How about, I have one on my top of my head. What the hell was it? I'll come back to it. I just forgot. I had one on the top of my head and I forgot.
I'm trying to trying to think of other gimmicks. I'm trying to think who else stood up for America in its darkest hour, you know.
I mean, the Ultimate Warrior did that one time against Sergeant Slaughter.
Oh, no. can't put him. As much as I love Memphis wrestling, you can't put somebody like...
How about Craig Pittman?
Jerry Law. Sergeant Craig Pittman. There you go.
And Cobra.
Yeah. Oh, God. Now we're digging the bottom of the barrel. Do we have 10 guys yet, Dan?
Oh, Lex Luger, Dan put. That's a good one, of course. How do we forget him?
Oh, the Lex Express.
The Steiners. They were all Americans,
no,
right? They were
No, we're not going to do the Steiner. I wouldn't put the Steiners on my list.
All right,
really,
Tatanka? How about this one? Here's one for you.
What?
Nikolai Volkoff. Remember he did the American gimmick in like 1990 when he turned?
No, he's eliminated. He was a Russian. How many times did he
put down the U.S. flag on his tights? That's about as American as it gets.
Oh my God! You're
put him in there,
heart.
Dan. 1990, Nikolai.
How about this? The Olympian Kim Patera.
Yes, great one. Mark Henry. Early run. He was the U.S. Olympian.
Yeah, but nothing sustained. Now Mark Henry's had a great run, long run, but nothing like Kim Patera, who you know, kind of based his gimmick on being a U.S. Olympian.
We better never do spelling bee because Dan would be in trouble looking at this as he's typing these out. Ted Arcidi, was he American? No, he was just like a weightlifter, right?
It's a power lifter, yeah. I think we're good. I think we have our guys. Oh, shit. Okay, Dan. Who do we have?
All right. We got Dusty, Hogan, Angle, Patriots, Sergeant Slaughter, Jim Duggan, Corporal Kirchner, Ranger Ross, Bill Watts, U.S. Express, Lex Luger, Craig Pittman, Nikolai Volkoff, and Ken Patera. So I'm comfortable putting Nikolai as our bottom. So wait, how many do we got here? 1, 2, 3. 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. We got 15 guys, so I'm fine putting Nikolai as our 15. You comfortable with that?
Oh, God. Yeah, he would be the last one. Let's put Ranger Ross next to Nikolai.
There. Okay. And then I think we put Craig Pittman after that.
Yeah. Just because you're in the military doesn't make you a good does not make you a good American.
Right.
Okay, I grew up a military brat. Thank you for serving our country. Doesn't mean you're a good person.
But he had U.S. on his shirt. Remember, USM, the U.S. Marine Corps. So he had the U.S. was on. He promoted the U.S. on his shirt.
There you go. Okay. So who else? Should we put Lex Express up in the top 10, or is he bottom five?
No, I think we can hold. I mean, I think like Kirshner
would be bottom five. Yeah. Now, hold on. Kirshner did win a flag match against Volkov at WrestleMania 2. One of my all-time favorite moments as a young child.
All right. Well, would you rather put the Patriots below him?
Man, but they were like one of the first five things we remembered.
Yeah, but they didn't even have like anything U.S. themed, did they? I mean, they were just a fireman and hell was Todd Champion? What was he?
He was a champion. Put them in the bottom five.
They're 12. I'd say we go Kirshner 11.
Sure. Okay. Who's our top 10?
All right. So we got Dusty Hogan, Angle, the Patriot, Duggan, Slaughter, Watts, U.S. Express, Luger, Patera. I'm fine putting the U.S. Express next, I think.
Yeah, there you go. And out of that group, it's hard for me to say this, but Patera would be after that.
Yep.
Then Lex.
Below Watts?
No. Below Patera.
I know, but you would have Luger after Watts, I'm saying, in your ranking.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Bill Watts was All-American, man.
All right, so Patriot next. I know he's the most, arguably the most patriotic guy. But
So what does that take us down to?
All right, we have eight. We got top seven we have to choose. So we got Dusty, Hogan, Kurt, Patriot, Slaughter, Duggan, Watts are our top seven in some order.
Repeat that.
Dusty, Hogan, Kurt.
Yep.
Patriot, Slaughter, Duggan, Watts.
Let's do Patriot.
Yep.
Then let's do Slaughter at six.
Yeah, because he turned.
And he was an American heel. His gimmick was, I'm American and I'm a heel.
And Duggan technically sold out, too, if you remember. He went to Team Canada for a bit.
So. Oh, but that was under Russo. Does not count.
Okay. How about G.I. Bro? We forgot him in here.
Oh, shit. No. G.I. Bro in
there. Lieutenant Loco, who the rest of the misfits in action.
General Erection? Yeah, not going to happen.
That's what we call Dan.
You know how many times in this segment you've almost got me to put an F in the F jar?
We've been good. We haven't done one yet.
I know. Anyway, okay, so we're down to our top five, right?
Yeah, we got Duggan, Watts, Kurt, Hogan, Dusty.
This is hard. Duggan, Watts, Kurt.
I mean, Duggan is so identifiable. Like, that's him, the flag.
I think Watts would be a good number five.
Yeah, I'm fine there. And now these top four are tough. And I'm going to make an argument to put Dusty four, because he was Americana, the American dream. But when I think of this, I think flag, I think... Hogan has it in his theme, American. Kurt, the U.S. Olympic hero, all decked. I mean, he was about as U.S. as it gets. And Duggan with the flag.
Here's where you're wrong, though. Hmm. Who else during the Cold War, besides Rocky, which was fiction, mind you, could bring the USSR and the USA together?
Demolition.
No. Dusty Rhodes.
Well, they technically did. They brought Axe and Crusher Khrushchev together. The Smash Superstar and Crusher Khrushchev.
That's a traitor. He should have been electrocuted like the Rosenbergs. Sorry. Dusty Rhodes. I will fight tooth and nail to fight. I will fight tooth and nail.
All right, who are you putting below him? All of them?
All of them. Dusty Rhodes is my number one. Plus, look at it this way. As the American dream, Dusty Rhodes never turned heel. While as a wrestler.
All right, true. I'll give you that.
Never turned heel. Always lived that gimmick.
All right, then okay. I think we put Hogan four. Because Hogan, he went completely away from it for a while.
Not only did he go completely away from it, but it turns out that saying your prayers and taking your vitamins was not true. He was a steroid abuser, which you cannot argue.
I say we drop him below the Patriots, then. Fine with me. We'll leave Hogan here four. So it comes down to Kurt and Duggan. Now, a couple guys we did forget. We forgot Jack Swagger, the real American.
Too current.
He was a real American. I mean, twice in his name.
Okay, he could be number 16 behind Nikolai Volkov.
No, he goes ahead of Volkov. Swagger. I'd slot Swagger in 12 before the Patriots, okay. Before Pittman, Nikolai.
Sure. Why not?
All right.
But we're Buck really...
Buck is his dad.
Duggan, let's see, Duggan and Angle.
All right.
Now, here's the thing about Angle.
Yeah, tough one.
He is a legit, true American Olympian with a gold medal. That's legit. No one can take that away from him.
And he had the
but
Patriots
he is also a known drug abuser. But then again, so is Jim Duggan, who got busted smoking pot with the Iron Sheik.
It's all about redemption
pot
story.
With the enemy.
All right, so I'm going to put it this way. And this is why I'd maybe even argue for this guy at one, but I'm not going to fight you too much on Dusty. Only one of the guys on this list elicits cheers to this day. We're talking almost 20 years of when he wrestles USA. USA.
That is absolutely true.
Like that is identifiable as anything else to do with Jim Duggan is the crowd chanting USA at him.
And besides that brief flirtation with Russo, has always carried the American flag to the ring, never wavered, helped Bill Watts crush the Russians.
Well, there was that one time he carried the WCW flag versus the NWO instead of the American flag.
Okay, once. But yeah, you know what? You're right. When the entire crowd chants, to this day, even on legend segments, right, when he comes down, USA, USA. You know what? You sold me. Jim Duggan is the number one Americana wrestler.
Yes, over Dusty. Nice.
Has to be. And then Angle 3.
Yep. Hogan 4.
I mean, are you okay with putting Dusty at 2? Because you seem like, I know Kurt Angle is one of your boys.
I'm okay with it. I mean, Dusty ain't winning no Olympic medals, but no, you won me over. I mean, in all the things, he really identified with the tough times in the 80s, beyond just the Cold War, you know, the hard times, the American dream. I mean,
violence for the sake of violence, man. That is my man, Dusty Rhodes. So, and like I said, man, there's so many tributes across the web on the Place to Be Nation. And I want to kind of move on to something that Dusty Rhodes created, which... This is in his favor. The Great American Bash.
All right, before you do that, let me quickly give the final rankings, okay? So this is backwards from 16 to 1. Nikolai Volkov, Ranger Ross, Craig Pittman, the Patriots, Jack Swagger, Corporal Kirshner, U.S. Express, Ken Patera, Lex Luger, the Patriot, Sergeant Slaughter, Bill Watts, Hulk Hogan, Kurt Angle, Dusty Rhodes, and Jim Duggan.
I like it.
Top Americana.
I like it.
Gimmicks. Okay, talk Bash. Talk to me.
Now, this is another Dusty Rhodes creation. I think we could probably do an entire game on nothing but Dusty Rhodes creations. When you talk about Starcade, War Games, Great American Bash.
I wanted to do that, and you said you didn't want to do anything Dusty related.
Oh, I don't want to do it today. I don't want to do it now. I mean, I think people, there is like grief burnout.
No,
you know, and I don't want to do that. But to me, when I think of Americana, I think of me as a 12-year-old sitting in my uncle's library at his house in Phoenix, Arizona, watching Worldwide and Saturday Night, the Great American Bash Tour 1986, watching the best of seven between Magnum T.A., and Nikita Koloff for the U.S. American title, or U.S. title. Okay? So to me, that's kind of what this whole theme of Americana is to me. When I think of, like, American imagery and wrestling combined, to me, the Great American Bash is it. And I was so bummed out. Now, and I think you'll appreciate this, my uncle, rich doctor, lives out in Phoenix, passed away some years ago. He took me to a WWF event in Phoenix, but I never got to see the NWA on the Great American Bash Tour. But that's what I have vivid imagery of when I think of what it means to be American and a wrestling fan, is watching Crockett TV in that time period of 1986, that summer. It just goes together. Dusty winning the world title. Magnum losing the U.S. title to Nikita. Rock and Roll and Midnights, just tearing it up. Just what a great time to be a wrestling fan. So, what about you? What brings America into your wrestling world, JR?
Well, the first time I would say... The first show I remember being really American-themed as a fan, so remember, I started watching 90, would be WrestleMania 7, one that we watched last year, Will, together, and talked about. Of course, that was Hogan Slaughter, and a little bit Rumble 91, I guess, Warrior with the red, white, and blue, and all that.
And I want to ask you about that, too, because to me, that's an insult to America. You know what I mean? It's not using American imagery. Like, to me, the Great American Bash felt American. Mm-hmm. It felt natural, organic. It felt like a tribute to the country. You know what I mean?
Yep.
It almost felt like a Hands Across America video.
Yep.
Whereas the whole Hulk Hogan USA Sergeant Slaughter thing felt so contrived, so fake, so forced that it really...
Well, see, not to me.
Makes you embarrassed.
Not to me.
Well, I guess age matters. Absolutely matters.
So I'm 10 but watching that, and a new fan.
If you were 10, yes, I could see that as a 10-year-old.
And especially at an age where, like, you're not thinking exploitation, but you are thinking fear. Because you're hearing stuff on the radio, Desert Storm, it's a war. Like, you're kind of trying to process what's going on in the world. Like, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Is there a war still going to be gone in 7 years? Am I going to get drafted? You're like, that stuff starts going through your head at that age. And then all of a sudden, you know, playing out on your TV, a new fan of this art form. I could see why they took the shot at it, I guess.
Yeah, but see, I like my exploitation of wrestling to happen after the fact.
You like not guys that dance to funk music.
Yeah, see, no, I like okay. I like it when we have Nazis and evil Japanese characters after we already won World War II.
Right.
You know, I don't want it during World War II. Okay? I don't want, you know, but actually we could get into a history lesson on propaganda and everything that happened in World War II, but we're not going to here. Okay? But to me, I think that it's something that you don't want someone like Sergeant Slaughter to be the American turncoat during that time. You know what I mean? He should have been standing up for the USA during the war, not.
And it's interesting too, is they first brought him back. I mean, were they definitely headed that way? Because I feel like he was just supposed to be the angry heel military guy, and then the war broke out, and they kind of just went that way.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was the plan when he first came back.
It's just so cheap, man. Yeah. Just so cheap. How much time do we have left? Because there's another thing that deals with America I want to talk about, but I want to see if we have enough time.
11 minutes and 38 seconds.
Oh, we got plenty of time.
Want to talk tribute to the troops?
We can talk tribute to the troops. I think it's a great idea, man. I don't particularly really invest my time in watching them. But I think that, you know, anything to rally the troops, you know, and I've talked to a lot of veterans. I live in the town San Antonio where there are 5 military bases. I have a lot of military friends. I'm a military brat. A lot of people that you talk to, you know, coming back from Iraq, Afghanistan, they're there. They serve their country, but it's not like they want to be there.
Right.
You know, they do it because it's their job.
And those shows, they serve the purpose, too, of, like you said, of being a break, a treat. And yes. Everyone who's at those shows, if you do watch them, they generally seem to be loving, you know, they're going, some of the best crowds WWE has, or WWE has every year.
Even if you're not in a constant state of war,
right.
You know, you're still in a war zone.
Yep.
And you know, one of my closest friends was in the Navy stationed in Afghanistan for several years on and off. A lot of the time you spend there is pure boredom. It's that tension before a skirmish breaks out. It's sitting around waiting for the next move, you know, always kind of on your toes, always apprehensive. So when something like that happens, man, I'm a big supporter of the USO. I think it's great. You know, when Bob Hope and Marilyn Monroe and everybody would go visit the troops, you know, during wartime.
We're going to take PTBN out there soon on tour, live. live
there
podcast.
There you go.
Those are good shows, we'll though, to throw on if, like, you're, I don't know, falling asleep, you may get a buzz, and you're trying to crack, like, something like that. Like, those are fine, like, network kind of fodder shows where the matches, you don't have to think much about them. They're all those kind of basic. Right. There's not a lot of storylines. You get some good video packages, sure. Some fun moments. And there's been some pretty good matches along the way, too. I remember that Michaels Triple H boot camp match. It was, you know, solid. And they have I think Foley came out that 1 year of Santa. Austin came out of Santa that year. Stunned Vince or JBL. Remember all the different stuff they've done.
Sure. And one thing I really like about it, too, is the atmosphere is so different. You know, because you're on a military base or whatever, that it gives the show a unique feel. And I wish WWE would do that more often, where, you know, they would put wrestling matches on in unique venues. That's why it was so refreshing when Nitro debuted, right? Because you'd have it in a shopping mall, or you'd, you know, have a bash at the beach. It'd be out on the beach.
Yep.
Excuse me. So, to me, the tribute to the troops setup is so refreshing because it's just so different than your stale, tired, boring, hasn't changed in 15 years Raw setup.
Well, if I remember too, wasn't I think the one this past year, I think it was back in an arena. I feel like, I don't know, Dan, do you know off the top of your head? I can actually, Graham's got it here, I think. Let's see. Oh, no, his only go up through 2011.
I think it was, because I think the year before was really cool. It was like in like a airplane hangar that was set up like an arena, which had a really unique look to it. But I think this one looked kind of like any other show, I think.
Yeah, those early ones were really cool. The 03, 04, 05, where they were out in the desert, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. During the heat of the war, like the peak of the war.
Here we go. Here's the rundown. So 03 was in Baghdad. Yeah, that was right during the war in Baghdad. 04 was in Tikrit, Iraq. 05 was in Afghanistan. 06 was back in Baghdad. 07 back in Tikrit. 08, Camp Victory in Baghdad yet again. 09, they were in Iraq. 2010, Fort Hood, Texas. First event not to be held overseas, but again.
Oh, but I think that was the year that the Fort Hood massacre happened. I think that's might have been the reason they did that. Remember?
And still on the base outside.
Sure.
11 was in Fayetteville at the Coliseum. They said they were near Fort Bragg. So that's the first one that looks like that wasn't outdoors. 12 was in the Scope, referred to as Naval Station Norfolk. 13 was back on base in Washington. And then 14 was in Columbus, saying near Fort Benning. But so, yeah, it looks like the last handful of years we've been kind of mixing in arenas. So we're kind of losing a unique look.
Well, and to be fair, you know, the wars have winded down,
right?
You know. So there aren't as many troops stationed overseas. And, you know, I think it would be cool even if they went to bases overseas, maybe, you know, Germany or you know, Korea or something like that. I don't know. I don't know where bases are located anymore with closures or whatever. But I think it would be neat to go overseas for the troops who don't get a chance to see wrestling on a regular basis. I think that'd be neat, too.
Definitely.
And, well, one last thing I want to talk about is the USA Championship. Okay. I know earlier we talked about the wrestlers that signify America. We just talked about events that we relate to wrestling with America. Well, the belt that has to be synonymous with America is the USA Championship. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned earlier that, you know, for me, the US Championship was Magnum versus Tequila. And you do not know how crushed I was when Nikita won that best of seven. It just wasn't supposed to happen, you know?
Right.
It really was disappointing.
So I sent you over the...
I mean, because Magnum... No, I saw. Magnum was supposed to be the American savior. He's supposed to strike down the Russian nightmare, and he failed. And it was kind of devastating as a kid to watch that, you know. And later, there were great champions. I guess we can go into the modern day because you're a little bit younger than me. What do you think of this John Cena U.S. title run? I mean, this is a multi-time world champion, and now he's trying to elevate the U.S. title. What do you think?
Yeah, I like it. I think it's worked really well. I think the open challenge has been a big part of it. Now, if they weren't doing that, I don't know if I'd like it as much per se, but I think that's a big piece of why it's working so well. And the fact that they're making the belt seem important, they're not just having Cena act like he doesn't care that he has it. They're making it a big part of the feud, both with Rusev and now with Kevin Owens. And Cena, and I sent you that link for a reason, Will. So Cena's number 11 on the championship list. He's had four reigns for 309-plus days. Did you open that list yet?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Well, I wanted to maybe give you some trivia. So are you looking at it? I wanted to see if you could guess some stuff.
I am looking at it, but if you want me to shut it down, I will shut it down.
All right. Are you looking at the total number of combined days of reigns for guys?
No.
Okay.
I don't even know where that's at, but
okay. Continue. So who do you think is the all-time leader of combined days held the U.S. title?
In WCW and?
Altogether, yep. Anytime that title's been around. So both NWA, WCW, WWE. Who's had the title for the most amount of days?
Ric Flair.
Very close. He's number two. He had six reigns for 700 even days.
Oh, wow. Who was number one?
Lex Luger. Five reigns, 948 days as champion, Lex Luger.
Wow. Okay. I don't remember any of his reigns.
So here's your top five. Greg Valentine comes in at number three.
Yep.
512 days. Blackjack Mulligan tied. He's fourth place alone. Four reigns for 509 days. And then you got two guys tied at number five. One old, middle old school, and one recent. Both tied with 419 days. One guy, though, did it with one reign, and the other guy did it with two. Any guesses as to who the guy that had one reign? He's the highest. He's the guy who has the most days held as in one reign. Is this guy. He comes in at fifth all the time.
Was it Nikita?
Nope.
Shit.
Not too far after him.
Sting?
Very close.
Man, you could just tell me.
Well, who beat Sting for the title?
Man, I'm horrible at wrestling trivia, as my showing on Brainbuster showed. Who was it?
Yeah, Rick Rude had it for 419 days.
Oh, okay.
One reign.
Wow.
And he's tied with MVP, Montel Vontavious Porter, who had two reigns for 419 days.
Would have never guessed MVP, ever. Ever. You know, just not. Those are the kind of things that will kill me in trivia. I just know that Ric Flair, because the U.S. title, especially, when Harley Race and Funk and those guys, the U.S. title was basically the title that people feuded over in the Mid-Atlantic area, you know, and so that was Ric Flair and Greg Valentine's running ground back in the late 70s, early 80s. So Flair and Valentine, Steamboat.
Here's a fun piece of trivia for you. So there's one guy who had one reign. There's been 79 different champions. He had a reign for one day. One reign for one day. He's the least amount of days as champion, U.S. champion. And it's pretty infamous.
It was Steve Austin.
Nope.
Conan.
Austin must have had it. Well, see, this is combined days, right? So he had a short reign, but this is the guy that had the fewest amount of total days as champion, which is one. So he never won it again.
Man, my head is drawing a blank. Who was it?
So this guy won it at a pay-per-view, lost it the next night to Bill Goldberg, and that is Raven. He had a one-night reign.
Yes.
Remember that? And that was Goldberg's big win on Nitro the next night.
Yes.
Knocked off Raven for the title.
Oh, do you remember that? To me, that was a special moment as a wrestling fan. Bill Goldberg winning the U.S. title back-to-back, and then winning the world title, right? Because he won the world title not too long after that.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that was the last time before maybe Cena that the U.S. title like was involved in something major when Goldberg won it that night. Just a monster pop. Because I think Raven had beaten Benoit, I think, the night before. Or DDP, one of those two guys. Maybe it was DDP. I think it was Spring Stampede. And then he won it the next night. Goldberg.
Man, yeah, Goldberg. I think we could do a whole show on Goldberg, honestly.
You might have to be.
Like a 2.5 hour show on Goldberg.
Yeah, Raven beat DDP and then lost to Goldberg the next night.
I think we should do a show running down every single opponent Goldberg had during the
everybody streak. Beat, okay.
Like and that's it, guys. Time is up on Americana.
All right. Good discussion, Will. I think I didn't even get to the Undertaker opening his robe and having the American flag underneath to join the All-Americans at Survivor Series 93. So.
I don't remember that.
It's a great moment. All right, so our third fall in the books, Will and Dan. But before we get to our mailbag, let's quickly just talk PlaySimulation.com. Lots going on. Me and Scott's Vintage Vault Refresh series continued today. Survivor Series 94. A great piece up right now. The PT Band Comics crew put up their 2015 Halfies Awards. So you're going to go in and vote on the half-year comic book award show here for PlaySimulation.com. The staff all weighed in on this. The nominees are there. The polls are there. So be sure to go in and vote. Jordan Duncan and his son Isaac recap Tough Enough Week 1. Jordan went through the episode, kind of gave his thoughts as a reality show maven, and then him and Isaac provided their power rankings for the contestants, so be sure to check that out each and every week. Aaron George had a great recap of a great alternative, ROH TV, getting a lot of pub for being possibly the best wrestling show of the year so far when you look at just pure wrestling content on this week's Ring of Honor TV. Jay Martell looked at Jurassic World, the record breaker. Glenn Butler had his Wednesday walk around the web. Glenn Butler also paid tribute to James Horner, the great composer who passed away. Bayless had your Raw review. Scott and I did No Mercy 04. Andrew reached out to Murray, which is probably going to be a little dated by the time you hear this, but still a fun listen. They previewed the NBA draft on the NBA team. Tons of other podcasts for you to enjoy. A couple of other treats coming up later this week. And also dropping just now alongside this show is the brand new Exile on Bad Street episode number 9. The Life and Times of Buddy Landell. Chris Zellner, joined by David Bixenspan and Dylan Hales, pay tribute to Boudreaux, the ups and downs of his career, and of course him passing away just a few days ago. So be sure to check that out. Must listen, as is the entire Exile on Bad Street catalog. Well worth your time each and every episode, whether it's chronicling Jim Crockett promotions, whether it's looking at the life of Dusty Rhodes or indie promotions and stars of the 2000s. Really a crown jewel here at PTBN.com. We're lucky to have Chris in that show.
4 hours this tribute to Buddy. Four hours.
That's a hell of a tribute to a very interesting wrestling figure. So, PlaySimulation.com, Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation, Twitter, Place2BNation as well. Be sure to check us out. Hit us up. Contact us however you wish. If you want to get involved or if you just have some feedback for us, be sure to share it there. So, Dan McGinn, we have some mail that we're going to answer. These questions come from the Pro Wrestling Only message board. We have a dedicated mailbag thread there. We also have one on our Facebook page, our live chats group as well. So, Dan, set the clock to 10 minutes and let it rip.
We're going to the party. We're going to the game. We're going to the disco. We're going to cruise out, man. We're stealing people's mail. Stealing people's mail.
You've got mail.
Guys, the Confederate flag is in the news lately, and Robert S. wants to know, explain the usage of the Dixie flag in Southern wrestling to non-Americans. Is this more appropriate for heels or faces?
All right, I'm going to totally defer this one to Will, other than saying I remember Dick Slater unsuccessfully carrying it around as a face in 1986 in WWE.
Yeah, as the Rebel, that's right. The answer would be, in today's America, it would absolutely be a heel gimmick. And times are changing. However, historically, it would be completely contingent upon where you lived in the country. Tracy Smothers and Smoky Mountain Wrestling used to carry, we talked about Duggan carrying the American flag. As their number one babyface, he used to carry the Confederate flag to the ring with him in Smoky Mountain. The Southern boys used to have, Tracy Smothers again, used to have the Confederate flags on their jackets. They were babyfaces for a while. So it completely depends on where you're at in the country. If you're in the Deep South or Appalachia area, any state that was part of the original Confederacy, it's a good chance it was a baby face. If you're in the north or in the west, probably a heel gimmick. And that's that.
All right. Some guy named Parv, you guys might have heard of him. He wants to know what favorite, what's your favorite high spot and why?
All right.
You take this one first.
Favorite high spot. I always liked, and this is kind of topical because we just watched No Mercy 04 and this move played a prominent role. You know, Kidman's shooting star press when he'd really make sure he buried it. Eddie Guerrero's frog splash was always my favorite frog splash because he always made sure to really land with heavy impact. I mean, if you're talking pure, just garbage kind of mark out, you got RVD and Shane doing the Van Terminators. Those are always fun, kind of wild high spots. I mean, I guess that's what he's looking for. I mean, one crazy bump I always like is the, and it was completely unnecessary, when Shane McMahon took the bump off the Titantron and Steve Blackman dropped the elbow on top of him at SummerSlam 2000. No, it's just a few off the top of my head.
Okay, I'm only going to give two, because to me, I always define high spot differently. I don't define it so much as a big move off a top rope or a move that is insane. I define it more as a move that gets the crowd to say, holy shit. Okay? And I don't mean in modern senses. I'm talking about past... I'm losing my train of thought here. I'm talking about a spot like Stan Hansen's Lariat when it finishes the match. There's a match with Stan Hansen in a tag match against the Rock and Roll Express. Ricky Morton comes off the ropes, and Hansen hits him so hard with the Lariat that you literally, for a split second, don't see Ricky Morton's head attached to his neck. It looked like he was the Headless Horseman as he was falling down. And so to me, those type of spots always elicit a big reaction. And if I have to pick one off the top rope, Randy Macho Man Savage's flying elbow. Just loved it every time I saw it. Up until he was legitimately breaking guys' ribs with it because his knees were too broken down to catch the fall.
All right, so here's one that kind of combines those things, right? So it's off the top rope, so it's a true high spot. But it's also one that made me like jump out of my seat the first time I saw it. And it only, you know, it happened once, but it came out of nowhere and really caught me off guard. And like, it was like, holy crap, because I'd never really seen it before. And that is Survivor Series 1995, when Marty Jannetty powerbombs Skip off the top rope to eliminate him from the wild card, from the underdogs Buddy Donna's match. And it ended the match. And I always...
oh, that's right.
Actually, it didn't end the match. I'm sorry. Just eliminated Skip. But that move came out of nowhere for me at the time. And I remember popping big time. So that's one that always stuck out in my mind as like a big high spot at a young age that I saw that I hadn't really seen before. That always, you know, I always enjoy rewatching that spot.
I want to mention one more real quick, JR. The Chris Hamrick bump. Are you familiar with the Chris Hamrick bump?
I don't. Tell me. Maybe I am.
Chris Hamrick, jobber in the 90s, mid-carder and like little indies around the South. He would take the bump where he would go through the ropes without touching the ropes and land flat back first on the floor. And just look it up on YouTube, Chris Hamrick bump or Chris Hamrick takes insane bump or something. It'll pop up and your jaw will drop. But he did it regularly. It was a patented move of his, so you have to really check that out.
Okay,
so
I'll definitely
there you
check
go. Next question, Dan.
Guys, our buddy Dylan Hales writes, what formerly great in-ring performer was most brutally crushed by the weight of the 80s WWF style / schedule?
Ooh. Brutally crushed.
Well, I mean, if you want to talk injury, right? What was brutally crushed? I mean, Orndorff, right? Couldn't take the time off to rehab the nerve.
Right.
Went around the horn with Hogan. They were making so much money, but because of the schedule, had to wrestle so much, and then his arm just completely atrophied and was gross by the 90s.
it was such a weird arm.
Right. I know, right? Just bizarre. It doesn't look like an arm. So that's one guy that would pop in my head when I think of a guy that just got screwed by the schedule of the 80s.
Another guy who cracked, Barry Windham.
Yep.
He cracked. Remember, he bailed on Crockett, bailed on Dusty, and he cracked. He couldn't take the schedule.
Quick Draw McGraw, wasn't he the one that was just heavy into drugs or whatever because of the schedule?
Yeah. Now, if it was the schedule only, those are kind of the most obvious. If you want to talk about crushed by the gimmicks and the way they were portrayed,
right?
I would easily say Butch Reed.
Yeah, it didn't help him.
No. And maybe there were other outside factors involved, but Butch Reed.
What about Coco becoming the bird man instead of just Coco Ware?
No, that
helped him.
Coco is the bird man. I don't know if it helped him as a credible wrestler, but as a character, he was over.
Right.
And I'm sure he sold lots of those rubber dolls that they used to release that didn't move and you couldn't actually...
What about the AWA? I mean, they were brutally crushed by not keeping up with the times, so I guess, as a promotion, right?
That's a good one. Or another person that I would think was, in a way, Barry Windham. A second time coming back as the...
Widowmaker.
What was it? The Widowmaker.
Yep.
You know? Just never felt the same when he left the NWA. So, man, there's so many guys where the WWF style made them less than they were before. Rick Martel never got to show that world championship form he had. Kurt Hennig was an awesome world champion in AWA. Mr. Perfect, the character, was awesome, but never got to show in the ring what made him so great in the AWA. So,
There's some guys, too, that probably made a lot of money, but... because the style was build the heel up, feed him to Hogan, and then bury him. Some of those guys that were challengers to Hogan, you know, either on house show circuit or on TV, are guys that maybe could have had a different run, too, if the style of booking wasn't that way.
Yeah, good point. All right, so I think we answered that pretty good. What do you think, Dan?
No, I think it's fine. I got one more fun one for you guys to wrap this one and put it to bed, all right? We got Neil Trauma. He goes, in the spirit of the 4th of July weekend, what is the best food to cook on the grill? Hot dogs, hamburgers, steaks? Do you do that chicken with the beer can up its ass? What do you guys like to grill on your 4th of July?
I got this.
Yeah, go.
I'm in Texas. We're cooking brisket, brother.
Brisket's great. Can't argue there. It's hard to top a good, you know, well-cooked hot dog or a burger, like a really good, well-cooked burger. We make a little bit different in the Northeast, but I don't think this is a 4th of July thing, but we've been doing a lot of grilled pizzas here, and those come great on the actual grill. That's not really 4th of July based. So I'll go with you. I'll go with the brisket. I'll go with a nice big, you know, not a frozen packaged hamburger. I'm talking fresh hamburger on the grill. Hard to top that on the 4th of July.
There you go. That's Americana, buddy.
Throw an egg on there. No hard times here, baby. Fried egg. You ever had a fried egg on hamburger?
No.
Come on.
Are you serious?
Oh, it's delicious. Try it.
I think I'm going to try that.
Try it. Fried egg on a hamburger. Throw some bacon on there, too. Now you're talking.
Dan, you do that?
I've had it. It's divine. It's wonderful. I also go with sausage and peppers, too. That might just be a Boston thing up here.
Yeah, sausage and peppers, delicious. Well, I'll be having those in a few weeks at the big Italian festival, St. Mary's weekend, coming up soon.
And a hamburger with a fried egg. Dude, I might have a heart attack. I'm a fat guy.
Nah, try it. It'll be fine.
Might not be an episode 4.
Don't take that officially, but you'll be fine. Seriously, go ahead. I mean, I know nothing about your medical history, your cholesterol, but you'll be okay. I mean, it's just an egg.
Looks like I'm getting promoted.
Well, no, we'd probably just end the show. But yeah. If you, have you eaten an egg and a hamburger on the same day? I mean, you're just combining the two. Just skip breakfast or something that day. You'll be okay.
Never put them under the same bun.
I'm sure you've eaten a lot worse things than a hamburger.
This is probably true. Probably today, in fact. Anyway.
Well, Will, we hope you're back in 2 weeks for episode 4. We hope you don't
If not, it was fun.
We went out strong
Dan, you can pick my final five picks for my draft.
He would have wanted the show to continue. That's how we'll go with it.
It's like Brutus Beefcake, The Rock Don Morocco. Who else do you like there, Will?
Magnificent Morocco, The Rock Don Morocco.
Yeah.
All the Morocco.
Barry Darso.
And then
Cade. Yes.
We're going to take Randy Ross in 87, so he's in his prime by 90 when you have him.
Oh, my God.
All right, let's wrap this up. So everyone have a great 4th of July, whether it's chicken with a bear can in its ass, whether it's a hamburger with an egg on it, whether it's brisket, pizzas, whatever it is. Go ahead and enjoy it. Have a safe, happy, healthy holiday. Tune in next week. Kevin Kelly Show. We'll have referee Todd Sinclair will be with us. And then also the main event led by Scott Criscolo.
Mike Tondo. Corey Funk Jr. Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry. Finish up the wrap up, Jared.
That is the wrap up. Otherwise, tune in, PlayStation.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Everyone take care.